All right, welcome back to the weekend edition of the KE Report, and it's time to switch our focus more to the energy sector, specifically oil and natural gas, as we're chatting with Dan Steffens. Dan is the president of the Energy Prospectus Group. We're going to talk about the oil and natural gas prices, what the political impacts, especially around tariffs, are on these prices, and then get into some stocks, some opportunities Dan sees in the market. Dan, right now, as we're recording this, oil back down to that $71 barrel. Natural gas right around $355. So oil's pulled back. Natural gas is still holding up generally at a higher price than we saw for like the last year or so. But the big question on everyone's mind is tariffs. What kind of impact are tariffs going to have, especially if they're put into place on Canadian production, even the U.S.? But I think most eyes are on Canada. Just look at how underperforming the Canadian stocks are. Dan, overall, when it comes to the pricing environment for oil and natural gas, what are the political impacts right now in your eyes?
Well, right now, the tariffs that Trump said he was going to put on oil and gas, which was going to be 10%, you know, 25% on everything else, but oil and gas is going to be 10%. I don't think he's going to put them. So Trudeau meets with them. They come to an agreement that Trudeau's going to put more emphasis on controlling what goes across the border. And as long as they show some, you know, declining fentanyl coming into the country, I think the whole tariff thing with Canada and Mexico is because of the drug trafficking. I mean, we have pretty much shut down illegals crossing the border. You know, Mexico's put troops on the border. We put more people on the border. We're deporting illegals that are here, especially focused on the criminals and getting those out of here. I heard two full plane loads went to Venezuela yesterday. And so that's pretty much shut down. So it's really just the drug trafficking. And as long as that gets under control, I think it'll be fine. And I think people need to remember, you know, there's over 100,000 Americans per year dying of fentanyl overdoses. And there's kind of this paradigm that it's all these druggies that, you know, sleep on the street of, you know, San Francisco or something. But no, it's not. It's people that can't afford the prescription drugs, and they may buy some drugs like, you know, on the quote, you know, cheaper market on Mexico or something, and they're laced with fentanyl, and then it ends up killing them. But I talked to, a friend of mine's a police officer in Houston, and he says it's weekly. There's two or three, four or five deaths in Houston every week from fentanyl overdoses. So it's a pretty big deal, and he wants to get that under control, and it's one of his campaign promises. So I think if both Mexico and Canada do what they promise they do, then he will not enforce them on oil and gas. Now, he did place a 25% tariff on imported steel and aluminum, and I think that applies to all countries, and I think it goes into effect in a couple months or something. But I was on a webcast today, and that will increase completed well cost because a lot of steel goes into, you know, the tubing and casing of these wells. And that will increase that, which will lead to higher oil prices. You know, they're going to pass that along. So we got to have higher oil prices. But U.S. production is not going up. Outside of OPEC, there's really not much production growth in the world. And the global oil market is getting tighter and tighter. So I think we're looking at higher oil prices here pretty soon. But I wouldn't put too much into the tariffs impacting oil and gas prices in Canada. I'm hoping it doesn't, and I don't think it will.
Well, Dan, just two more thoughts on this. The CEO of Marathon Petroleum came out just yesterday and was talking and was quoted as saying, "We believe that the majority of the increase would be borne by the producer, and then, frankly, to a lesser extent, the consumer." And they were basically saying, hey, that this is going to have an impact on the producers because, and then they would probably pass some of that cost along. But I guess the bigger question would be, if there's tariffs on the heavy oil coming out of Canada, that's what we need in our refineries to create diesel. How does that affect the diesel market? How does that affect the trucking industry?
Yeah, that was one of the questions. I was on the World Oil webcast this morning, which Wednesday morning, and they talked about that specifically. We get 4 million barrels a day of oil coming in from Canada every day. It's like 2/3 of our total oil imports. And most of that is heavy oil that is needed. Black oil is needed to make diesel and home heating oil. And our those are distillates. They're called distillates, included in the distillate inventory. Our distillate inventories in the U.S. are 10 or 11% below normal for this time of year. And diesel is used in farming equipment to plant our crops. So Team Trump, he's got guys on his team that know that this would create higher diesel costs, higher food prices as a result, higher everything prices when you increase diesel, you know, and eventually higher gasoline prices too. But we need Canadian oil. And so they're going to have to work out something. That's why I do not think he's going to enforce it on oil. Maybe he'll enforce it on natural gas, but we don't really don't get that much gas from Canada anymore.
So does that open up the opportunity for Canadian stocks then? Because we're just at a conference in Canada, and quite frankly, a lot of the Canadian-focused producers were still saying just how tough the pricing environment is, because you can't just look at what it's priced in U.S. dollars, especially on the natural gas front.
Yeah, I mean, we were just talking before we started recording that, man, most of the companies on our 20 on our top 25 picks are all Canadian companies, because we're valuing them based on their net present value, their proven reserves. And these companies are trading at like incredible discounts. I mean, when I worked for Hess, I was always looking for takeover targets. And I would tell you, of the 25 on my list, these would all be pretty much takeover targets, because they're trading at like one or two times, you know, three times cash flow, which is insane. I can't believe how cheap some of these Canadian stocks are. So yeah, I think there's a lot of opportunity. So let's say they do put the tariffs in place. The tariffs are just like another tax, okay? So that tax is going to be passed on to consumers, or, you know, first purchasers of their production and stuff anyway. So yes, it impacts them maybe directly, but it's going to be passed on eventually through price somehow. I'm frankly a little bit worried about the steel tariffs, because they will raise the completed well cost. And it will cause some of these companies to cut back on their drilling program. And U.S. production is not growing. It's pretty much just flatlined.
Well, Dan, just thinking about the steel and aluminum tariffs, which actually are in effect, there's a lot of outcry from auto manufacturers saying, hey, this is really going to crimp our manufacturing and production. What could that mean to the oil and gas sector?
Yeah, it will. I mean, because you use so much steel in well completions, you know, tubing, casing, all that. There's a lot of steel used in these completed wells. So yeah, it'll impact them. And if their completed well cost goes up, they're going to either have to add to their capital expenditure budget or drill less wells. And I tell you, all the companies that I follow, they've got the medicine for financial discipline, and their shareholders want dividends, their shareholders want stock buybacks, and they don't want any of these companies. If a company announces they're going to be outspending their cash flow, that stock gets crushed. So, you know, just go with the ones that are generating a lot of cash flow, have fairly, you know, clean balance sheets, and I think you'll be fine.
What are you seeing in terms of capital programs then? It's one thing that these companies do. They need to do. They need to keep reinvesting in the ground, keep drilling new wells, keep improving even current wells, and returning money to shareholders. But let's just focus on that capital program aspect. What are you noticing out there? Are companies spending more than they did in the last few years?
Well, the CapEx, that was the main topic of this morning's webcast by World Oil. And every year they do this in mid-February. They have, you know, kind of they go international, they go by region of the country and everything, and they say, but pretty much overall U.S. is going to have flat capital. Their drilling programs be flat the last year. So a lot of people, you know, Trump's drill baby drilling all this, what's it going to do? And basically said for 2025, nothing. It's really going to have no impact on our production and no impact on the upstream companies. Then they've got to wait to see, you know, what happens with all this tariff stuff and everything. So I don't think there's going to be any increase whatsoever. Now, we are getting better wells. You know, they're drilling longer laterals. They're, you know, each year seem to be a little bit better on the well results they get per foot. Sometime now, we are running out of tier one acreage in a lot of the plays. And especially in the Permian Basin, you're getting, and month after month, we're getting increased gas to oil ratio. So that's a sign that we're kind of, you know, running out of the tier one acreage. So it's, I just don't see U.S. production going up much at all in the next 2 years. And in fact, EIA's recent forecast is that actual production in 2024 was 13.2 million barrels per day. In 2025, they're saying it goes to 13.5, so up 300,000 barrels per day. In 2026, only 100,000 barrels a day to 13.6. And a lot of people are saying that when the Permian peaks, the U.S. has peaked, and we can't go much higher, no matter how much money to spend. So, because most of the other plays are pretty much flat to on decline.
Well, Dan, even if overall production may have peaked, there are still companies that are growing, and sometimes they're growing through their own, organic growth, but sometimes they grow through acquisition. And one of the companies that you wanted to chat about today is one we've talked about a little bit in the past, but it's Diamondback Energy, traded on the ticker FANG, and obviously its counterpart, which we will get to, Viper Energy Venom, VNOM. But Diamondback did a mega merger with Endeavor Energy last year, more than doubling, almost tripling their output. So that's one way to grow. Maybe break down the value proposition that you see in Diamondback Energy.
Well, Diamond, I really want to talk about Viper, but Diamondback is one of the most successful U.S. companies. In September, on September 10th, they closed. I call it a mega merger. They closed with a private company called Endeavor Energy, and because it's private, the Wall Street gang doesn't have that much as much confidence in their presentation or everything because they're not public. They don't have publicly audited financial statements and all that other stuff. But I'm sure they're still audited for their debt and everything. But it added 300,000 BOE per day. So Diamondback, and I started covering this company like 10 years ago when it was had like 50,000 barrels a day of production. It's now up to 850,000 barrels a day of production, 56% oil, 22.5% NGLs, and 21% natural gas, and solid company. Okay, when they did the merger with Endeavor, even before they closed the merger, on their conference call to explain why they did it, said they were going to drop down the mineral rights, and they acquired a lot of mineral rights in this deal, and they were going to drop those down into Viper. Now, Viper was created by and is controlled by Diamondback, and when all the dust settles on this deal, it was a so the transaction with Viper was valued at $4.5 billion. It was like twice the size I thought it was going to be. They're getting Viper's paying them $1 million in cash, $1 billion in cash, and the rest of it in stock, in their stock. So Diamondback's going to get this $1 billion in cash. They're going to get all this stock there, and it's going to end up with like 60% of the equity in Viper. So they'll be getting the distributions, the quarterly distributions that get paid out of Viper. And it's kind of like they sold the assets to their own controlled subsidiaries. So they sold the assets to themselves. But if you're investing for yield, this one looks really good. And it looks, I would call it an income plus growth. It pays about a 5.5% dividend. They will be raising their dividends later this year as they get more of these revenues from the acquired properties. But right now, the dividend is about 4.5% based on the current share price. But it's got a ton of upside. I mean, it's increasing its production by 32,000 BOE a day to 88,000. It's a much smaller company than Diamondback, but it's a much safer because mineral companies are not, they don't pay any of the drilling costs or operating expenses. They don't have drilling risk, so they have a lot less risk. They pay out variable dividends of about 75% of their cash flow, and they're continuing to grow as they do bolt-on acquisitions of smaller packages and stuff like that. So anyway, it pays a variable dividend. The next dividend, which they raised, was 65 cents per share, which will be paid on March 13th. I think that's to owners of record on about March the 3rd, 10 days earlier or something. Based on my forecast, they should be increasing dividends in the second half due to more than 50% quarter over quarter increase in their production from the first quarter to the second quarter. So when they get those second quarter revenues, that will impact their third quarter dividend. So I do expect them to pay, even close to a dollar a share dividends once they get to the third quarter. I think owning these mineral companies, considered like you're actually investing directly in oil and gas. because they don't have all the drilling risk and stuff, and they do hold a lot of proven reserves, but you're getting a dividend at the same time. So these stocks typically go up and down with the oil and gas prices, and just where do you think oil and gas is going? But instead of buying oil where you don't get paid a dividend, if you owned oil, you'd be paying storage fees someplace. So you can buy these companies and you actually get good dividends while you're waiting to see what happens to the oil price.
Okay, I'm glad you went over that because look, that is the risk to these companies is that they do follow the oil price. So as long as the oil price stays high and moves higher, these companies do well. If it does drop down, then they do see the bottom line, actually the top line, get hit in terms of revenue. But Dan, Viper needs to grow through acquisition, right? So are they just going to focus on Diamondback Energy and any mineral rights or somewhere else?
Now, they have steady growth locked in because Diamondback is running like a dozen rigs on their minerals. Diamondback is a very aggressive drilling company. They're running like 20 rigs. They're one of the most active drilling companies in the Permian Basin. And both these companies are pure Permian Basin companies. And Diamondback favors drilling on their minerals because they own, 60% of Viper, which owns the minerals. So that increases their revenue share if they drill on the on areas where they own the minerals. And so that they have organic growth built in of about maybe 10% per year, and they continue to do more acquisitions of minerals at the same time. So it's a very aggressive growth company, but you get a nice dividend and while your equity, value of your equity goes up at the same time, you're getting really nice dividends. I like it. Personally, is one of my largest holdings.
Would you like to see them do even more transactions outside of the Diamondback, acquiring more minerals, more royalties on other producing basins, or would you like to see them stay focused in the Permian?
Well, they're going to be totally in the Permian, I think. And they actually announced at almost the same time the Diamondback deal was announced, they announced $211 million cash plus 2.4 million shares acquisitions of the Merida Ranches minerals. They bought a big minerals package just like a few days after the Diamondback thing was announced.
All right, Dan. So you like Viper. We've talked about Viper. We have touched on it before. Again, is it more a focus on Canadian companies then? It sounds like that's where you are seeing the sweet spot for investors currently.
Yeah, I like a lot of the Canadian juniors. I'll call them juniors, like Hemisphere, InPlay. I like Surge. It looks really good. The other day, I looked at a company called Spartan Delta. It's moved up to number 7 in our ranking system. It's been that Duvernay oil play up there. Its current production is heavily weighted to natural gas. So if natural gas prices in Canada start coming up, which they will, they will in response to the higher price in the U.S., then that's going to help that one. But their drilling program is focused on increasing their oil production. And this management team at Spartan Delta has a long history of building companies and selling them at big, big profits. So it's a very well-respected management team. And it's a big company. It's like 40,000 BOE per day. A lot of it is gas right now, but it looks good. So that symbol is SDE on the Toronto Exchange. Looks really good. Let's see, InPlay, like I said, InPlay came out with their drilling budget. InPlay in the first half of the year is going to be very focused on generating free cash flow because they took on some debt last year to drill some wells and make some acquisitions. So the first half of the year, they're not going to be spending a lot of money on drilling. They want to wait to see what happens with the tariffs too. But then after spring breakup, once you get to June or July, they'll increase their drilling. But the first half of the year, they're going to generate about 10 or 12 million dollars in free cash flow that they can pay off and shore up their balance sheet. Anyway, there's a lot of good ones up in Canada.
All right. Well, good to hear, Dan. I know a lot of these Canadian companies still, in a way, struggling. The capital market's not nearly as friendly to energy companies as it seems like the US markets have been recently. And quite frankly, just the pricing power that Canadian companies have, well, it's not as good. So if that all changes, boy, oh boy, that can really help their top and bottom lines. But until that changes, these companies are, in a way, playing, I find, a little bit more defense than some of the US companies.
Yeah, they are a little bit. Oh, go
Dan,
ahead.
great chatting with you again. Dan Steffens, president of the Energy Prospectus Group. you all can click the link in the show notes, whether it's on our website, on YouTube, or in your podcast player, to follow along with Dan and all the companies he covers and all the reports he shares on his companies. Dan, thank you very much for joining us on this weekend show. And everyone, thanks for tuning in on this weekend show. Please be sure to subscribe on your podcast player or on YouTube. Keep in touch with Shad and I, and be sure to check back in throughout the week to listen to all our daily editorials and company updates we recorded. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.